but he said that's a strange tattoo you have on the side of your head. Said that's a blue mark left by the cold. A little more and I'd have been dead. I like the rumble, I like the dark blood, I like the blue of the sleigh. But it's gone down that new road looking for a job. Traveling and looking ahead. Traveling and looking ahead.
On behalf of the entire KBOO community, we'd like to offer our sincerest thanks for your contribution to KBOO's end-of-year membership drive. We challenged KBOO supporters to help us meet 3 donation matches and raise $45,000, and you stepped up. Your generous support, combined with hundreds of other community radio donors, helped to raise $85,000 for KBOO. We knew you could do it, and together we did.
Today on Wings.
Basically, we ran some workshops on domestic violence and no one turned up.
I didn't want to talk to my friends because they would just tell me to leave, and I suppose deep down I didn't really want to.
It's been a long, hard haul for women in Australia to have due recognition that domestic violence is a crime.
My mum would leave and we'd be left in the house and he'd be trying to break her car apart and I'd be out there like, you know, stop it, Dad, what are you doing? And he's...
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Domestic violence. A special report by Heather Anderson at 4ZZZ.
Change gonna come my way. Black woman, black life, domestic violence, borderline. Change gonna come my way.
Domestic Violence Prevention Week ran in Queensland from May the 7th to the 13th, a week of community education and prevention campaigns. On May the 10th, the Department of Families, Youth and Community Care presented 5 awards as part of the 4th annual Domestic Violence Prevention Awards. I caught up with one of the awards recipients, Adele, from Young Mothers for Young Women.
A group of 12 young women who began parenting while they were still teenagers got together and did a participatory action research project which looked at the links between gender and violence in the lives of young mothers. And one of the major recommendations that came out of that research was to develop a peer network for young women, because it was found that that's where young women who are in domestic violence situations most turn to. They turn to their friends. And so it's just really grown from then. Now there's 3 of us that are still working on the project, and we basically just try to support other young women. And the most obvious way that we do that is we run a drop-in day every Tuesday. And it's similar to a play group, only it's limited to people under 25. On the Tuesdays we do things like have other people come in to do education workshops such as family planning, to talk about sexual health. All different things like that. Last year we ran a 12-month project looking at educating young women about healthy relationships in an effort to combat some sort of domestic violence. We did some really informal research about how young women want to hear about domestic violence, and basically we ran some workshops on domestic violence and no one turned up. And we started to think that, you know, women don't want to hear about domestic violence, or they won't come to something titled about domestic violence. So throughout the workshop we just talk about healthy relationships and what does a healthy relationship look like. A lot of young women say that they just don't know what it looks like. Their parents didn't have a healthy relationship. You don't see healthy relationships on television all too often. And so unless you know what it looks like, it's a little hard to get it and then even maintain it. Towards the end of the workshop, we do a little bit of education on that violence isn't just physical, it's emotional and financial and all those sort of things, because we found if you spoke of violence, young women only pictured physical or sexual abuse, whereas they didn't realise that the financial and emotional stuff is abuse as well. So hopefully we've been able to educate some women about what violence is, but then also to look at how to maintain a healthy relationship and how to get a healthy relationship. We've just started to focus lately on celebrating relationships, because all of the young women that come to the drop-in day, they all have at least one relationship in their life that's healthy and worth celebrating, but because their relationship with their partner may not be so good and may not be worth celebrating, they tend to get bogged down in the negative aspects of that. Whereas we're saying to them, well, look, you've got this wonderful, healthy relationship with your child. Let's celebrate that. And if we can celebrate that, maybe we can take those characteristics and they can go into intimate relationships.
Do you think that starting a family young and the stereotype of the single mother and the you don't know what you're doing, you're too young, puts pressure on people to stay in relationships that might not necessarily be healthy?
Definitely. It was actually one of the things that came out of the original research. We call it the pixie photo trap. When you begin parenting young, you get a lot of flack anyhow. So it's very important that you maintain that picture of a perfectly happy family. I mean, it seems to me, and the research seemed to show, that that is so much more important to young women, to present that pixie photo. And that also influences young women to getting help if there's violence in their house, because not only do they not want to leave, but they don't want to get help, because that's admitting that their photo isn't perfect. Your educational employment opportunities are much lower once you've had a child so early. So for a lot of women, it's their only option to be someone is their family. And a lot of young women just don't want to leave violent relationships, and we started to find that a lot of domestic violence services will only assist and support a young woman or a woman if she is prepared to leave the violent relationship. Whereas we sort of think, well, let's give young women the skills and hopefully they can take that home, and their partner can take some of those skills on, and they can create that relationship together.
I also caught up with Julie and Betty from the Zigzag Young Women's Resource Centre in Brisbane, and asked them about providing support for younger survivors of domestic violence.
Often young women report that when they go to general shelters, they're not feeling comfortable, particularly when they do have children of their own, and they may be feeling uncomfortable with their parenting skills, you know, housed in such close proximity with other women who have children. It's important to consider what their specific housing needs are.
I guess in terms of just coming to the service or having access to the service, it's also about their need for flexibility. And I guess the other thing is just about the environment, you know, a comfortable environment where they feel safe. And that's quite often different to what generic services or generalist services provide, that they often feel that the space that's creative, that's, you know, got posters all over the wall, that kind of thing, is also important to them.
I think also that it's important to consider that young women are disadvantaged doubly. Socioeconomically, they're, you know, more inclined to be living in poverty because of their gender, but also because of their age, that they're more likely to be sole parents and the primary child carers. They're more likely to be in part-time work. And so therefore, when young women are fleeing domestic violence situations and trying to get safe, secure, affordable housing, all of those things impact on their success in fleeing the situation. Often young women are more likely to stay in a violent situation.
And it's not that older women don't tend to stay in situations of domestic violence. That's also very true. But I guess it's also very hard for them because of the lack of support out there in trying to flee that situation, that they often don't have the support of their families because the mother's also experiencing domestic violence, so they're also doubly at a disadvantage because they don't have that support from their parents either.
So what do younger women themselves have to say?
It wasn't when I was born, it was more so when my brother was born. So I was about 6 or 7, about 8, around that time when it really started to kick in, and I'd never seen anything like it before. I didn't know how to react, and it was just kind of like, whoa, this isn't exactly right, is it, you know? It started getting to the point where he was starting to take it out on me, and my mum just said, look, I'm going to have to send you to your grandparents. It's only up the road, you know, but you'll be away from it and all. And I mean, that was hard for me because, I mean, I really liked my mum and I really, you know, my brothers and sisters. And then a couple of years later, my sister ended up moving in with me. And the worst thing is that my brother has to put up with it. He's 14 and it still goes on to a certain extent. It's not as bad as it used to be. There aren't places for people to go once they've decided to leave. They might not have the support network. And the domestic violence order is a joke, you know. Yeah, you can get a restraining order, but it doesn't prevent him from getting a gun, staking you out, you know. Absolutely flying off the handle. So you've got the option of, okay, packing up everything and just moving, changing your life, changing your names. And a lot of people don't have money to do that. I mean, it was common in my house, have an overnight bag packed, a louver that was out so you could escape. That's not normal, you know, having to live in a situation like that, but that was what it was at the time, you know. When you're 9, you don't really have a lot to say. You don't really have a voice either, you know.
And, I mean, the amount of people who just stay in situations where their parents are hitting them and they stay there because they haven't got any option, they've got nowhere to go, they haven't got the money, and it's frightening to go out there and try and do it.
I've had heaps of violence happen in front of me, like, at home, like I saw my mum get murdered.
Society today, everyone is so angry and everyone's so on the edge that they just snap at nothing. And that's what I found with my dad, is I'd have to tiptoe around and just hope that I wouldn't trigger anything off, because once I did, he'd drink one weekend and he'd get into a fight, and then the next weekend it would all blow up and it would be hitting. And he was like, you know, my mum would leave and we'd be left in the house and he'd be trying to break her car apart, and I'd be out there like, you know, stop it, Dad, what are you doing? And he's, I hate you, I hate your mum, I hate your brother, I hate the whole lot of you. And it's just having your father look at you and just say, I hate you, like that was just awful. I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have the friends that I have.
Ever since I did an assignment about capital punishment and things like that, and jails, I just thought, why can't we put that money into making families better, but not in a conventional way? Putting money into making families feel whole and counselling and giving more benefits to them so they don't have worries about money, so they beat their wife or have to have addictions, because a lot of it's cyclic. Like, a lot of people who beat their wives, their parents did exactly the same thing.
Going to hurt my babies anymore. Not while I can do something about it. Oh, you want something to eat? You don't cook.
I think domestic violence is a really big issue, and young people are seeing it in their families, seeing it happen to their mums and dads, or seeing it happen to their mothers in particular. And often what happens is that cycle continues then when those children grow up, because they don't see any other positive ways of dealing with their feelings and dealing with emotions and dealing with anger. It's all they know how to do, and that's really sad, I think. I was in a domestic violence relationship for a few years, and I myself had seen it in my family, and my partner had seen it in his family. So, yeah, that's why we found each other. I never before that time could really understand why women would stay with partners who hit them and were violent towards them. But when you are in that situation, you can understand it, because if you really do love somebody, sometimes you are willing to make one incident, and you might have a history together and you've got all this emotional involvement.
What support did you receive?
I didn't really look for support. I just felt there was... Yeah, I didn't have anyone to talk to. I didn't want to talk to my friends because they were just... I felt they would tell me to leave. I didn't want to talk to my mother because she would probably tell me to leave, and I suppose deep down I didn't really want to leave, so I didn't really have any support.
My spirit can survive living with you for 18 years, but I can survive anything. Maybe you taught me that.
If there's any advice I can give to anyone who's out there who has children and is staying in that situation, it's don't. It's get out, and you know, your children should be the most important thing to you. And I understand that the house probably is as well, but, you know, when push comes to shove, you've really got to think, what kind of effect is this having on my children, you know? Is it stuffing them up psychologically, emotionally making them unbalanced, you know?
I think that we need to look after our young people today. Once you find a safe environment, everything works for you.
Just being taught what's classed as violence and stuff. I mean, there's school kids could have a fight in a schoolyard, and that they wouldn't really know that that's classed as assault. They could be put up for assault charges.
There are supports for women in domestic violence situations, but for young women, they feel that it's just not really for them. They think going to a women's refuge or talking to a support worker from a refuge is really for women who are married and who have kids and who need to get away. But for young people, I suppose if there was people to talk to at their uni or at college or at school, people they could talk to about lots of different things, at least if they know there's somebody around, then they might be more likely to talk to them if they feel like they're not going to be judged and things like that. There are like young women specific domestic violence workers and things like that, but it's just that a lot of people don't know that they're there.
I don't have a problem when I'm walking around because I've done self-defence martial arts, and so when I walk around, I just, if someone tried to do anything, I would fight them off, and I know that. That's just something I know. And I'm thinking about having like a meeting for young females and getting them all together and just seeing how they feel walking around on the streets at night, whether they feel safe or not, and then seeing whether people would want to have self-defence classes based for females walking around on the streets at night, how to look after themselves, how to feel assertive, how to feel like they have the right to be there.
You know it, you're in the wrong situation at the wrong right time, you know, it should be happening, but because you do feel really alone when that stuff's happening to you. And it's not as if I would have gone to a support group or anything and then said, oh, this is what happened to me, but maybe more slogans around the place. I don't know, like I see a lot of people getting charged in the papers and stuff from molesting kids and stuff, but I don't see any campaign saying, did you know that it's not accepted in this society that you molest your children? More about what is accepted and what really goes on, I suppose, behind all the closed doors. Mm. Yeah.
I think a lot of people need some relationship skills. They need to be taught, like, about sexual abuse, sexual harassment, what's classed as it, what's classed as violence, rah rah.
I think telephone lines are a good thing, because if you got a telephone line like a 1-800 number, it should be right there in the front of the phone book. People go into schools and talk to young women about it from like grade 8 onwards or even younger, so that kids who are seeing their mum being bashed up every night and they get really scared, they can like ring this number, a general violence number or help number, and you can ring that number and you know that if you're in trouble or if you need to talk to somebody, there'll be somebody there, and they can then give you maybe another number for somewhere to stay, things like that if you need help. But it would need to be 24 hours. I think that might be the best type of way of making something accessible, a 24-hour phone line, because nearly everyone has access to a phone nowadays. It's handy to have a common number in your wallet rather than... You might have, there might be a support worker at your uni or at school, but when you need them at midnight, they will be asleep, you know?
Reclaim the night, reclaim the night. Reclaim the night, reclaim the night. Reclaim the night, reclaim the night. Reclaim the night, reclaim the night.
Reclaim the night, I think, is great. You can just go out with your girlfriend and know, okay, this is cool. I can walk down this street, I'm with a whole heap of other women. Who's going to take on an angry bunch of women, you know? And, you know, it's always good to see toddlers, little kids and stuff, and even young male toddlers, I think, is a really good thing, because I think males today just need to get in touch. You know, a lot of them are just, oh, I'm this big macho thing. Who cares? As long as you understand that, okay, women want the right to go out and participate in whatever, you know, and we live in a violent society. We've got to start doing something to counteract that.
Not your right, our right, our right. Not your right, our right.
Finally, I spoke to Kate Gilmore, Chief Executive Officer of Amnesty International in Australia.
Domestic violence, by its very nature, is a violation of fundamental human rights.
And would you support Amnesty International in Australia taking up this cause of defining domestic violence as a human rights abuse?
Well, in fact, Amnesty International, of course, is only one of many organisations within Australia which has identified to the Australian public, and in particular to government, that domestic violence is a violation of human rights. Amnesty International's particular role in drawing a connection between domestic violence and human rights is the role of the international. We monitor human rights violations in a range of settings, and monitor the reality that domestic violence is a common expression of persecution of women, one which is intolerable, unacceptable, and quite illegal under the framework of international law.
Now, there's already legislation against domestic violence in Australia. How would the definition of that offence as being a human rights abuse affect this legislation?
Well, there's three important messages that a human rights framework built around domestic violence gives us. The first thing is that all domestic violence legislation should not be assessed just against itself. It should be assessed against the bedrock of international standards. So legislation pertaining to criminal assault in the home should be tested for its efficacy and fairness against international standards such as the Convention Against Torture, the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. These sorts of treaties provide us with a benchmark, a minimum standard, if you like, that all our legislation pertaining to the protection of Australians' human rights must be assessed. So that's the first thing. The second thing that human rights reminds the state and the populace of as a framework is that it is indeed a crime against the individual citizen, and therefore a crime against the state. It's been a long, hard haul for women in Australia to have due recognition that domestic violence is a crime. Referencing it into the context of international human rights law reminds us the responsibility for ending these crimes against women lies fairly and squarely with the state. It becomes a very important tool for us to encourage the state to meet its obligations, to recognise them, and to resource services and programs necessary to fulfil those obligations. But the third important thing is it reminds every Australian citizen that we share in common, inalienably, we share in common with every other citizen around the world these same universal rights, and that no culture, no religion, no tradition can ever justify the physical, sexual, emotional, economic abuse of women and children in the home. This is a right that you and I share, but we share it with the women of India, with the women of Nepal, with the women of Pakistan, with the women of America, and with the women of the United Kingdom. These are universal rights that no one has any authority to strip us of. Not our husbands, not our fathers, not our brothers, nor our governments, nor the police, nor any other nation state.
How much weight do you think that these rights and these protections actually have with the Australian government?
Well, I think the very fact that the government has found it so difficult to stomach even mild criticism of its performance under these key covenants, its reaction has been so defensive and arguably to the point of an overreaction, that evidence suggests, in fact, the power goes to support the argument that the treaties and conventions are very powerful. And we don't have to be experts in human rights law to see that. We just have to understand the psychology of peer group pressure. What international human rights law brings and the treaty mechanisms brings onto the international stage is a system of peer group pressure. It involves the peers of the Australian government, wherever, in other words, governments all over the world, scrutinising Australia's performance against these benchmarks. And Australian governments of all political persuasions find it very, very difficult, embarrassing, shameful when they are criticised. It's the power of that external objective scrutiny that we need to bring to bear on issues such as domestic violence in order to protect the human rights of Australian women and children.
And just finally, how do you see the balance between fighting domestic violence through legislation and human rights covenants and working to avoid it happening in the first place?
Well, we know that social change involves a matrix or a web of activity. The sorts of redress and adjudication that a justice system can offer post the commission of a crime is a real point of last resort. It's a thoroughly insufficient response, but it's a minimum response. We do know the rule of law must be present and active in a society in order that that society be fair, free and equal. So the rule of law and its application to domestic violence is absolutely essential to the social integrity of the Australian community. But neither the police nor the courts can prevent domestic violence on its own, although they can act as a key disincentive. What we do need is leadership from government against violence, leadership from government and community opinion leaders on the status of women, affirmation that women and children are equally entitled to human rights with their male, as are their male counterparts. And we do need an Australian community well acquainted with their fundamental rights. We need an Australian community aware and actively engaged in defending and advocating their rights as defined under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Me actively defending and expressing my rights, so long as I don't do so at the expense of your rights.
He beats me so hard, so often I don't remember my natural skin colour. I know I should have left years ago. I should have thought of the kids. But I've been thinking a lot lately. I've made plans. I'm gonna do what every self-respecting woman should do. I'm not leaving today or tomorrow.
In this program, you've heard music from Australian artists Isis, Mothman, Purple Revolution and Ruby Hunter, as well as samples from the New Zealand movie Once Were Warriors. This is Heather Anderson, reporting for Wings.
That documentary by Heather Anderson first aired on the women's program of 4ZZZ in Brisbane, Australia.
Dad, could I talk to you for a minute? I just wanted to say thanks, Dad. Thanks for the values you've taught me. Thank you for teaching me that it's okay to let someone treat me with disrespect, that it's okay to let someone put me down and even hit me, and that it's okay to let someone rob me of my self-esteem and step on my dreams and make me feel worthless, just like you do to Mom. You've been a great example. I'll probably marry someone just like you. Thanks, Dad.
If you would like information about the cycle of generational abuse or are seeking help and information for someone you know, call the Awake Crisis Line at 272-0100. There is hope.
That public service announcement was produced at the Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation Training Center by Terry L. Schreiner. It aired in South Central Alaska in 1999 and won a Golden Reel Award from the U.S.'s National Federation of Community Broadcasters in April 2000.
Since this program was produced, there are more domestic violence hotlines available. The U.S. has a national one, 1-800-799-SAFE. If you're frightened of surveillance, search for hotlines in your area using private mode.
You've been listening to Wings, a weekly radio program by and about women around the world. To read about Wings' latest programs, check the website www.wings.org or email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks our helpers and supporters, including Suzette Cullen, Megan Marcy, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange. Our sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Today, we're joined by Matthew of KBOO's Gremlin Time and Professor Lisa Neville of Portland University, way over there in upstate New York. And the book we're looking at today is a short but densely packed monograph on Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt by Diane Negra. She's a professor of film studies and screen culture and the head of film studies at the University College of Dublin. So, and this book is published by Liverpool University Press in its Auteurs series. It's an academic book, so it's filled with words like actival. It's an adjective for somebody who's doing an action. Nevertheless, it is full of insight. For example, at one point, she writes that the murder-minded neighbor, Herb, with